Welcome to part two of our episode on beneficial insects and pollinator conservation as part of IPM. In part two and part three, we're going to be talking to Karen Jokla, who works with fruit and vegetable growers on implementing habitat solutions to preserve beneficial insect populations, as well as helping farmers to reduce the impacts of pesticides on these insect populations on their farms. So Karen, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I work for the Xerces Society for Invertebrate Conservation, and my position is funded by a partnership between Xerces Society, NRCS, which is the Natural Resources Conservation Service, and General Mills. And so I'm a pollinator conservation planner and NRCS partner biologist, which is sort of a mouthful. But that means that I am positioned in an NRCS office, and I work with farmers, producers across the state and in Minnesota and a little bit in Wisconsin on any kinds of pollinator-related or beneficial insect habitat projects on farms. So I come out and offer technical advice on how to do the site prep for those, how to design seed mixes, kind of strategic planning for some of them. A lot of them are supported by financial programs through the Farm Bill. That's how I'm a partner biologist, and I come in for sort of the fun field consultation part, and then I write up a set of recommendations and hand that off to the NRCS office that's working with that client.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned some like financial incentives or programs that farmers get connected with mm-hmm. to then get connected with you. Mm-hmm. What, like if a fruit or vegetable farmer wanted to either work with you or get like basically get associated with one of those programs, mm-hmm. what are some things that they could look into?
And the first step is reaching out to their local NRCS office. We're trained as conservation planners to follow this conservation planning process. So don't just walk in the office and say, I heard you hand out money for this project. What they want you to do is come into the office and tell them about your resource concerns. So say let's pretend you're a blueberry grower and you're concerned that you're not getting enough pollination services early mm-hmm. in the spring. And so that's your resource concern. And then the field office can help plan habitat or strategies around that. Yes. And so we would come out and consider what habitat you already have on your farm, assess the situation, and then potentially one of the solutions might be having you apply for one of these programs. One of them is called EQIP. It's Environmental Quality Incentives Program. There's a lot of pollinator habitat projects you could do through the EQIP program. So that's what a lot of fruit and vegetable growers do. But there is lots of others. There's the Conservation Reserve Program. There's Conservation Stewardship Program, which is CSP. Mm-hmm. And several others. And sometimes I'll come out and make some suggestions, and sometimes you don't need to be enrolled in a financial yeah. assistance program. You might be willing to just do the habitat installation on your own. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes more expedient to do that. Federal programs can take a while to get through. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
So a lot of the work you do, as you kind of mentioned, is just helping people to figure out how to create better pollinator habitat mm-hmm. on their farm. Mm-hmm. So aside from programs, if someone is just interested in doing that, mm-hmm. what's a good starting point?
Yeah, the first thing that I like to do is kind of recognize habitat that already exists on the farm. A lot of farms, a lot of farmers don't realize they already have habitat present. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they look like weedy or messy areas. When I get to a farm, sometimes the farmer will even be embarrassed about in certain areas, like an old rock pile or mm-hmm. brush pile, and they kind of want to skip by that part, and I try to show them that that can actually be really valuable habitat right. that we want to preserve. So what I do is kind of start from a landscape scale and then let the farmscape and see kind of from the outside in, what are all the different habitat features you already have present, whether it's nesting habitat, bloom time of different, even weeds, but hopefully more natural areas, field borders, and assess your farm management practices, like whether or not you're using any pesticides, whether you're mowing frequently, whether you're tilling a lot. So kind of do an assessment, and the Xerces Society actually has a tool that you could do this assessment on your own. It's called the Habitat Assessment Guide. It's on the Xerces Society website, and it's downloadable for free. So you could do that on your own. And it's a way to just kind of rank your own farm. Mm-hmm. And then what we would do is look for the gaps or the deficiencies in the habitat, and then target those deficiencies mm-hmm. to either build strips of perennial habitat within the farm, or work on field borders, or add flowering shrubs, or even just work on flowering cover crops, or find an area that you can stop tillage mm-hmm. To preserve ground nesting habitat. There are lots and lots of different approaches that you can take depending on the amount of time you can devote to it, the long-term planning you have for a certain field.
So how do you think about prioritizing those things? Like, if you don't have a lot of time, then you kind of have to choose mm-hmm. what type of habitat modification you're going to do. Like, how would you decide between habitat strips, or mm-hmm. like flower strips through a farm, or working around field sure. margins or a cover crop?
Yeah, that's a good question. Sometimes it depends on the field conditions. Mm-hmm. So maybe you have a field that isn't really working for you because it has a lot of weeds. Mm-hmm. That might be a great place. It's sort of marginal, so it might be a great place to put in pollinator habitat, but it also might be a lot of work because you don't really want to put in an expensive seed mix right. where you have a really bad Canada thistle problem, for example. So that would be kind of, you kind of think about like long-term or bite-sized chunks versus kind of a long-term strategy. So sometimes a lot of people will just, like, the gateway into adding more pollinator habitat is letting your crops bolt and providing mm-hmm. some, you know, letting your cilantro sit there flowering for a little while before tilling it under, right. Or your brassicas, or reducing your tillage. That can go a long way. Or adding annual flowering strips of cosmos, or something that you can even be a cut flower plot, but something that has nectar resources, nectar and pollen resources, and it's cheaper seed, and you can add it in a year. It's temporary,
right.
And then you can kind of go from there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're short and long range. Techniques you can use.
Yeah. So earlier on you mentioned just understanding what's already there
mm-hmm.
in terms of habitat. But what about in terms of like the pollinators and beneficial insects that you already have there? What sort of, we touched on this a little bit with Elaine, but like what sort of resources exist, or what do you recommend for going out and actually identifying what you've got?
Sure. So this is one area that can be intimidating, mm-hmm. I think. I mean, even as an entomologist, one of the things that drew me into entomology is that I once read a quote that said, you could be an entomologist for 10 lifetimes because there's just so much to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's so fascinating about it, because there's so much diversity out there. In Minnesota, we have 400 to 500 different native bee species. And so the Xerces Society, and then when you expand beyond pollinators, of course, there's all these beneficial insects, and mm-hmm. the vast majority of insects out there are beneficial. So we want to promote all those, but how do you know which ones are good and bad? So the Xerces Society has a few tools for that as well. One of them, like Elaine mentioned, is this It's a citizen science monitoring guide for the Upper Midwest. It's a little guide for native bee species, and the idea is for people to monitor restorations or parks or really anybody. It's a protocol, really, but inside of the guide, there's also a kind of a key that breaks apart the native bees into different groups that are a little bit easier to think about. So, like green sweat bees, for example, or hairy belly bees, or small, like tiny dark bees.
Right.
So it's, they're sort of functional groups.
Yeah.
And it still kind of gets at that diversity, but you don't have to be an expert.
Right.
And you can still adequately kind of categorize these different groups of bees on your farm. And where you're seeing them and that kind of thing. And it can be really fun. And then it can be a gateway to get into a little bit deeper identification.
Yeah.
So, and there's tons of photos, so that's a really great guide. We also have another guide. We have a book called Farming with Native Beneficial Insects.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a lot of good photos of some of the beneficial predators and parasitoids that we are looking for, natural enemies on farms. There's also kind of a supplementary guide, Habitat Planning for Beneficial Insects, and that also has really great, like an appendix on all these different natural enemies, and their life cycle and the pests that they typically target and conservation strategies to promote them.
Okay.
On the farm. So a few different tools there. So we also have like little scouting guides, like there's this little tool you could either there's scouting guides for soil because there's a lot of good beneficial soil invertebrates. There's beneficial invertebrates that visit flowers, and then there are some that might just be on the leaves, and sometimes the same insect would be found in all of those different places but at different life stages. So most beneficial insects do need floral resources at some point in their life, but maybe as an adult and as a larva, they're actually voracious, you know, aphid eaters. And so there are different places or times in their life that you can monitor to see if they're present on your farm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So one consideration when we're talking about creating habitat is creating habitat for beneficial insects while maybe avoiding creation of habitat for some of the pest issues that you have on your farm with creating secondary hosts or overwintering sites.
Sure.
Can you just talk a little bit about that balance and how to basically avoid creating extra habitat for the pest problems that you have?
Yeah, it's a common concern. One of the things that the Xerces Society promotes is conservation biological control rather than classical control that kind of promotes one predator insect.
Right. And often that, introducing.
Yeah, introducing one, right? sometimes an exotic control species. Conservation biological control really just promotes habitat within the farm that encourages the natural enemies that already exist in your region to bring them into the farm. And the best way to get the greatest abundance of natural enemies and the greatest diversity is by creating diverse permanent habitat.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a crop that is you're especially sensitive to, like an alternative host, like for example, apples, you might not want to put in shrubs from the Prunus genus. Or hawthorns because they share diseases or pest insects. Or if you are a berry farmer, you're going to be really careful about promoting shrubs that are berry forming because of spotted wing drosophila.
Right.
But otherwise, the more diversity you can put into your farm, whether that's crop diversity or perennial native habitat, the less reliance you'll need on pesticides because those beneficial insects are going to be kind of acting at all levels within your farm. And they may not completely eradicate your pest, but they will do a really good job. And kind of depends on your economic threshold within your farm, whether or not you can maybe tolerate some pests, so that way you can build up populations of the predator insects.
And that's an interesting question with fruit and vegetable growers. With the soybean field, you can say at this number of insects, you have this amount of yield loss, but it depends on your customers and
depends on the customers.
What they want their produce to look like.
Depends on your crop diversity. Crop diversity, especially with fruit and vegetable growers that don't have access to crop insurance, diversity is your insurance. So it depends on how important the crop is for your overall farm income. And I think that, some responsible or I would say informed use of certain pesticides, we're not saying that conservation biological control is going to mean you'll never need to use a pesticide. But there are, once you meet that threshold and you decide you do need to use a pesticide, then there's another kind of level of attention that you need to use for choosing pesticides that are not, have the least toxicity to bees or beneficial insects.
So we'll get more into pesticides in the second part of this, but just to kind of wrap up this habitat discussion, I'm curious to hear, you're a farmer, you've implemented some habitat for pollinators, beneficial insects on your farm. I'm just curious to hear a little bit about maybe some of the things that you've done and maybe what sort of changes that has made on your farm
or
how that's gone for you.
Yeah, so I would say I have a little identity crisis when I'm not exactly a farmer, but I co-own an organic diversified vegetable farm because I'm pretty busy off the farm with this job with the Xerces Society, but my husband manages our farm. Mm-hmm. And on our farm, my role has been to kind of play around and implement some of these habitat projects. Since I'm out promoting them all day, I kind of want to see how they work. So we have put in a lot of native plant strips, both from seed and from native plant plugs that we've grown in the greenhouse. We have just a huge diversity of native bees on the farm, and it's so fun to see them all, large and small. And just the other day, I was out watching all of the squash bees that we have on the squash flowers right now, and those are the best pollinators of squash. I've done some monitoring where we stick a little, basically a plastic cup in the ground at surface level, and leave it out overnight and monitor how many ground beetles we have in the field. And then it doesn't kill them, so you just release them the next day. Mm-hmm. But it's a way to see what's there, sort of some passive sampling. We use lots of different kinds of cover crops, some of them flowering. And I'm always out with my camera taking pictures on our buckwheat or whatever to see if all the beneficial insects that I say are supposed to be there are actually there.
Yeah.
And they are. It's really fun. Whether or not it's, I would say that we use very few pesticides. It's a certified organic farm, and we do use some organic approved insecticides for certain purposes. We try to always be cognizant of when we're spraying and what particular product we're using so that it's really targeting the insect that we are trying to control. I just have all kinds of ideas about projects I want to put onto the farm. One that might be a segue for a later part of the conversation that we're just putting in actually today, we're as we speak, probably this is being planted. We have a field that's transitioning to organic, mm-hmm. and it's adjacent to another field, a neighbor's field that's conventional corn soybean rotation. Mm-hmm. And eventually we might end up taking over that person's land.
Okay.
But for right now, we just need a pretty good buffer between our land and that conventional agriculture. So what we're putting in is just a grass strip, 30 okay. or 40 feet wide. We're not ready to put in like a conifer strip, something that's not attracted to insects, but a bigger, taller windbreak.
And by grass, you mean...
Like a native, bunch grasses, mostly warm season, like prairie grasses, if you can imagine a prairie. They're mm-hmm. bunch grasses, some of them are cool season, warm season grasses. They get really tall, that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
It's, you know, within, by next year, they'll be 5 or 6 feet tall, and it offers some kind of buffer. And importantly, it doesn't have flowers that are in that strip that might be attractive, or it might, you know, because this neighbor probably is using, for example, neonicotinoid seed treatments, and those that can drift into buffers and be taken up by flowers in that buffer, and so we don't want to attract pollinators to that buffer.
Okay. Yeah.
So these are just examples. We're trying to have a certain percentage of the farm in native habitat, mm-hmm. at least 5%,
yeah.
hopefully more. Some of it on a rotating basis of annual crops, but...
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I think... Thanks for listening. So in part 3, we will talk more specifically about pesticides and how we can mitigate the impacts of our own as well as our neighbors' pesticide applications to better support beneficial insects on farms.